Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Well, enjoying the hassle of driving and parking, I am. But taking time out to do a radio broadcast for your listening pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, we are not number one. We are not number one. Childcare has now been added to the list of things we're not number one at. America is, the United States, that is to say, is number 26 behind both Greece and Portugal. Yes, they're both suffering the pangs of EU-imposed austerity. What's your point? According to a new report from the United Nations Child Well-Being in Rich Countries, a comparative review, of the four countries that occupy the bottom of the list, the United States is the richest. Numbers 27, 28, and 29, right behind us, that is to say, are Lithuania, Latvia, and Romania. And they used to be communists. The report said there does not appear to be a strong relationship between per capita gross domestic product and overall child well-being. That should be reassuring to the kiddies. But what do we tell the children? Oh, go out and beg. The Czech Republic ranks higher than Austria. Slovenia ranks higher than Canada. Something wrong with this continent. The U.S. also ranked second from the bottom in child poverty rates. I think that means we have a lot of it. I don't think it means we have almost none of it, judging by a documentary I just saw. The only country among the 29 that has more children living in poverty than America is Romania. But the poverty looks good on them. The U.S. was also near the bottom for rates of immunization against measles and polio, as well as for something called, quote, child life satisfaction. I think they just threw that in to make the survey longer. The report noted that Canada and Australia became the first countries in the world last year to begin regular monitoring of early childhood development, a practice considered impractical and intrusive in many other countries. The report indicates, according to UNICEF, that child poverty is not inevitable but is policy susceptible. What are you saying? Exactly what are you saying, UNICEF? Huh? You want to go outside? Oh, all right. And stirring the pot of controversy on fracking, what the frack? New research suggests that fracking is not a significant cause of earthquakes that can be felt on the surface. Notice the weasel clause there. That can be felt on the surface. I think of the earth they're talking about. A group of British scientists looked at quakes caused by human activity ranging from mining to oil drilling. Only three could be attributed to hydraulic fracking. Most fracking events release the same amount of energy as jumping off a ladder. And how often do we do that? This is for a group based at Durham. They argue that the integrity of well bores drilled for fracking is a much greater concern. Research published in the Journal of Marine and Petroleum Geology. This would seem to contradict all those reports of earthquakes, like in England and in Oklahoma. Researchers from Durham University's Energy Institute say the pumping of fracking liquid does indeed have the potential to reactivate dormant fault lines, but they say that compared to many other human activities, such as mining or filling reservoirs with water, fracking is not a significant source of tremors that can be felt on the surface. All right, we'll keep that in mind when we build our homes near fracking. We don't want to build our homes on the surface. Or we do. That's where you won't feel them. Okay. Build your homes on the surface, ladies and gentlemen. That's good advice. So, by the way, just having said the word so, I'm reminded that I've been noticing the absolute rage for people on talk shows or discussion shows of any kind, when they are either asked a question or countering some other talker that's just been heard, to begin their sentence with the word, so. You see this in seminars and webinars and all sorts of R's. They're not concluding. They're not summing up. They're starting by saying, so. So it's now because Washington, the Yak Show universe in Washington, is always looking for a new way to say, listen to me. The most recent was, look. They'd start sentences with that. But I think so is fast in the Derby for you Brits, to replace look. Now, what I was going to say, or now, for that matter, listen to me. We have the spectacle of the death in Britain of longtime Prime Minister, first female Prime Minister of Britain, Margaret Thatcher. And the BBC was faced with a quandary because anti-Thatcher activists in Britain activated to get a song placed in the top 10. They still have a top 10. That's how antiquated they are. And the song, in fact, was Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. Now, the BBC has a chart show on the radio where they play the songs that have charted. And there was a big controversy as to whether they were going to play Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, because conservatives were afire with outrage that this was disrespect by the state broadcaster. It's not the state broadcaster when it collects license fees instead of taxes, but it's state broadcaster when they might insult Maggie Thatcher. So I think the compromise they reached was that they would play 5 seconds of it. I think that's long enough for the Ding Dong, but not enough for The Witch is Dead. Me, personally, you know, all I think is we should greet the death of this foreign leader with the same respect and circumspection that the media greeted the death of Hugo Chavez. Fair is fair. Hello, welcome to the show. Oh. A different Margaret now.
Margaret, back in junior high, Margaret, all yellow curls, she was the most popular girl. Margaret, she was beautiful. Margaret developed first. We all thought she had all the luck in the world. She never noticed me. What could I give her? I knew someday I would have to forgive her. Ooh, Margaret. Dear Margaret. West Hollywood, we all thought she could make it if anyone could. Margaret, she missed the reunion. Margaret, we never heard what became of St. Mary's glamorous girl. Until the day at the video center, man held a tape with a girl on the cover.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Yes. The movement never ends. The news at the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. So much news about the movement, I have to interrupt the John Williams bloviating, musical bloviating there. The chief executive of one of Australia's three commercial broadcasting networks, Hamish McLennan, yeah, it's an Australian name, says the broadcaster is not likely to bid for broadcast rights to this upcoming Summer and Winter Olympic Games. Why? Australia's three major free-to-air networks have reportedly all walked away from bidding for the rights to the Sochi Winter Olympics and the Rio Summer Olympics. The costly experience of the Nine Network showing the London 2012 games is the reason for the broadcaster's hesitation. Mr. McLennan said a lower price would be the only way to lure the networks back to the table. At this point, he says, and it looks unlikely, the only thing that would change it would be price. He said the losses on Olympic Games broadcasts had made the rights, quote, a little unpalatable, unquote. Now, switch the Olympic dateline to Moscow. A senior Russian government official dismissed allegations by Greenpeace that Russia is failing to dispose of construction waste properly as it prepares for the 2014 Winter Games. All measures to realize the zero waste principle are being implemented and are being implemented, said Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Kozak. Waste from construction sites in Sochi is currently being buried in the nearby town of Belorechensk. The buried waste will later be processed at a recycling facility in Belorechensk that is currently under construction. There are no problems with that, said Kozak. Greenpeace complained to the IOC that Russia is failing to meet its obligations to implement the zero waste principles during Olympics-related construction. But wait, there's more from Russia. Some of the biggest investors in Russia's Winter Olympics in the resort city of Sochi are requesting financial help from the government to help ease the burden from the game's estimated $50 billion price tag. In a letter obtained by Reuters and addressed to Deputy Prime Minister Kozak, who's responsible for the games, four major companies listed measures they want adopted to help them secure a minimum return on investment. You mean profits? The letter was signed by tycoons Vladimir Potanin and Oleg Deripaska, as well as the heads of Russia's largest bank, state-controlled Sberbank, beautiful downtown Sberbank, and state-controlled natural gas export monopoly Gazprom. It's the latest in a series of complaints investors have made in the face of costs that are expected to make the Sochi Olympics the most expensive ever and shaky prospects for profitability once the games are over. Measures worked out to support crucial projects related to the games, quote, turned out to be insufficient to guarantee returns on investment in Olympic venues, said the letter, without stating what those measures were. It cited the high cost of building in a mountain area with poor infrastructure. Gee, who would imagine that? Uncertainty about the commercial viability of the venues after the games. Gee, who could have imagined that? And the risk of losses after favorable rental rates, i.e. hiked up rents, and in 2016. Yeah, it's rough. It's a rough life, these Olympics. Now, switching the Olympic dateline to Rio. Dateline Rio de Janeiro, the costly renovation of Maracana Stadium, not Macarena, estimated at some $500 million, does not meet the requirements of the Olympics. So further reconstruction is going to be necessary. The Maracana was renovated and is going to be inaugurated late this month. It doesn't meet IOC standards in 39 points, including the dimensions of dressing room tunnels and roof strength. The IOC requires the roof to be capable of bearing a weight of 120 tons for the fireworks and lighting effects used in Olympic ceremonies. The Maracana's new canvas roof can sustain only 81 tons. Oh, you Brazilians. The tunnels have a width of 16 feet, a height of 11.5 feet, while the IOC demands dimensions of 20 by 20 feet for the tunnels and a maximum incline of 3, not 10%. Maracana was built for the 1950 World Cup, extensively renovated for the 2007 Pan American Games. And with a view to the next World Cup, an even more complete renovation was undertaken. And now they're going to have to do even more. That poor stadium. It must be getting tired. Another stadium built for the Pan Am Games, intended for track and field competitions in the Rio Olympics, has just been closed because it's in danger of collapse. The velodrome is about to be knocked down because it isn't up to Olympic standards, and a handful of other venues are being modernized or upgraded because they simply aren't good enough. They said that one of the reasons the Pan American Games were over budget was because the installations were built to an Olympic standard. We now see that is clearly not the case, says Alberto Murray, a former member of the Brazilian Olympic Committee. And according to multiple sources with intimate knowledge of the challenges facing the Rio Olympics golf course, yes, it's in the Olympics. Bring back softball. The course is dangerously close to not being completed on time and has obtained only a single permit for limited work at the site. Additionally, members of other international sports governing bodies are calling for the Rio and PGA Tour officials to explore other venues for the tournament. Two separate sources have expressed concern that a design which won a competition is dangerously close to not being completed on time for required venue testing. Two land disputes still plague the site, one over ownership of the land set aside for the design, one involving a prior owner's non-payment of a substantial fine for environmental issues. Get your tickets now. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Yeah, we don't let it end, because the Olympics never end. Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't been paying, on this broadcast, I don't think, enough attention to Russia lately. President Obama's nominee to become NATO's Supreme Allied Commander said this week the so-called reset in U.S. relations with Russia was now on pause. It's not on rewind. Oh, we recorded over it. Crap. He predicted Moscow would be the primary actor of regional concern through 2020. I thought that was Justin Timberlake. My mistake. Relations between the former Cold War foes, badly damaged by Russia's 2008 war with Georgia, had improved during Obama's first term. And Obama signed a nuclear arms treaty with then-President Medvedev in 2010. But ties have soured since Putin returned to Russia's presidency in May. Washington and Moscow have been at odds over issues ranging from Syria to human rights. You may have noticed, in response to the United States putting a travel ban on some Russian officials, Russia this week put a travel ban to Russia on members of the Bush administration, including John Yoo and Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, because they were involved in the torture regime. Torture? Did I say torture? I meant fame. Meanwhile, Putin weighs in with some harsh words about United States foreign policy. This is from a website called Al Monitor, which is a roundup of news about the Middle East. The conclusions drawn by Putin from the situation surrounding Iraq were concerned with the general idea of how the world works in the 21st century, i.e., the strong do what they want, they don't contemplate international law, global reality, or the costs incurred by themselves and others. This is Putin's analysis in the wake of Iraq. The only rational way of behaving in such a world is to increase one's own power and capabilities so one can fight back and exert pressure if necessary. Consolidation of potential in every sense is the secret of success. Which suggests why the case against the owner of Russia's largest oil company began immediately after the American intervention in Iraq. Putin believes the time has come to take all strategic assets under state control and prevent encroachment by global competitors. From Russian leadership's point of view, the Iraq war now looks like the beginning of the accelerated destruction of regional and global stability, undermining the last principles of sustainable world order. Everything that's happened since, in this analysis of Putin's view, serves as evidence of, quote, strategic insanity that has taken over the last remaining superpower. Moscow is concerned regarding Syria that the continued crushing of secular authoritarian regimes because the West and America support democracy will lead to such destabilization that will overwhelm all, including Russia. And speaking of the new Iraq, there was an alarming rise in Iraq's use of the death penalty since the invasion by the United States, according to Amnesty International. So they are getting more like us. At least 129 people were put to death last year, almost double the figure in 2011. Executions were often carried out in batches with up to 34 in a single day. At least 5 women were executed. At least 2 were sentenced to death. I guess I would hope they were before they were executed. Amnesty recorded at least 81 new death sentences in total. The real figure is possibly in the hundreds. Death sentences, according to the government, numbered between 250 and 600 in each of the previous 5 years. Most of them are imposed for terrorism-related offenses. All of them are reviewed by Iraq's Court of Cassation and then need to be ratified by the president. Many trials of those sentenced to death failed to meet international standards for fair trials, including the use of confessions obtained under torture. They really are getting like us and other ill treatment. Defendants described how they suffered systematic torture while in detention, including being burned on the face with cigarettes. Hey, no smoking in here. Or they were left in a room with water on the floor while an electric current was applied to the water. That's fun. Courts continue to include confessions, even if formally withdrawn as part of the evidence when handing down a sentence. Some Iraqi television stations broadcast the confessions before the opening of a trial. The death penalty was not enforced when U.S. forces invaded. There are juvenile offenders being put on death row, and so are individuals who committed, quote, non-lethal crimes. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, and if any Iraqis are listening, you are welcome. And now, no, we did that. Now, I have a feeling that wrong buttons are being pushed here in the Lachaud Dome. And now, here's the right button. You just press them all till you get to... Of course, it was the last place I looked. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. More on Iraq. Former Australian Prime Minister John Howard's justification on why the Aussies went to war against Iraq obfuscates some issues. This is from the Sydney Morning Herald and is written by Margaret Sveringa, who was an high-ranking intelligence official in the Australian government, the secretary of the Federal Parliamentary Intelligence Committee from 2002 to 2007. She says the scale of threat from Iraq's weapons of mass destruction was less than it had been a decade earlier. Under sanctions that prevailed at the time, Iraq's military capability remained limited and the country's infrastructure was still in decline. The nuclear program was unlikely to be far advanced. Iraq was unlikely to have obtained fissile material. Iraq had no ballistic missiles that could reach the U.S. There was no known chemical weapons production. There was no specific evidence of resumed biological weapons production. There was no known Iraq offensive research since 1991. Iraq did not have nuclear weapons. These were the intelligence findings presented to the Parliamentary Intelligence Committee, despite the Prime Minister's assertions to the contrary. From McClatchy newspapers, contrary to assurances, it has deployed U.S. drones only against known senior leaders of Al-Qaeda and allied groups. The Obama administration has, in fact, targeted and killed hundreds of suspected lower-level Afghan, Pakistani, and other unidentified militants in scores of strikes in Pakistan's rugged tribal area. This according to a McClatchy newspaper's leak of classified U.S. intelligence reports. Drone strikes in Pakistan over a four-year period did not adhere to the standards asserted by President Obama. They list killings of alleged Afghan insurgents whose organization wasn't on the U.S. list of terrorist groups at the time of the 9/11 strikes, of suspected members of a Pakistani extremist group that didn't exist at the time of 9/11, and of unidentified individuals described as, quote, other militants. In response to questions from McClatchy, the White House defended its targeting policies, pointing to previous public statements by senior administration officials that the missile strikes are aimed at Al-Qaeda and associated forces. You could be an associated force. Would you like to? The leaked documents show that drone operators weren't always certain who they were killing, despite the administration's guarantees of the accuracy of the targeting intelligence and its assertions that civilian casualties have been, quote, exceedingly rare. It's a very long analysis available at McClatchy newspapers. More news from outside the bubble. Afghanistan could descend into civil war within a few years of British, U.S., and other NATO troops ending their role there at the end of 2014. This reports The Guardian from the Parliamentary Defense Committee. Its warning was issued this week. It suggested the British government's attitude towards Afghanistan was one of simply hoping for the best, since it would have little influence over the country's future. Well done. Well done. Former British ambassadors to Afghanistan told the committee NATO's understanding of the Taliban was limited, that corruption and abuse of power was intrinsic in Afghan society, and that the country's economy depended heavily on the drugs trade. The committee criticized the government for failing to combat the perception that the pullout amounted to withdrawal through fatigue. More controversy about Maggie Thatcher's funeral, according to The Guardian. A dress code. Diplomats were left enraged and confused after receiving instructions that they must wear mourning clothes with a U, even though it's not a state occasion. Taxpayer money being used for it. I'm not sure she would approve. Speaking of those drone strikes, Pakistan's former president, Pervez Musharraf, admitted on a CNN interview this week giving permission for the CIA to launch a few drone strikes. But the McClatchy newspapers report Pakistan's premier intelligence agency secretly worked for years with the CIA on strikes that killed Pakistani insurgent leaders and scores of suspected lower-level fighters. REN, the Portuguese grid operator, we're changing hemispheres now, has just released new figures that show that nearly three-quarters of Portugal's energy needs were met by renewable energy sources during the first 3 months of the year. Portugal was able to generate 70% of its electricity needs in the first quarter of this year due to a combination of favorable weather conditions and huge investment in wind and hydroelectric projects over recent years. The recession couldn't have hurt either. So they've turned a corner on the drug war, and they're getting most of their energy from renewable sources. Portugal, ladies and gentlemen. Portugal. Now to Africa. The Queen of Pop appears to have met her match in Joyce Banda, the president of Malawi, who has delivered a withering verdict on Madonna's activities in the country. She is, quote, a musician who desperately thinks she must generate recognition by bullying state officials instead of playing decent music on the stage, said the president's statement. She wanted the Malawi government to roll out a red carpet and blast the 21-gun salute in her honor. She needs to learn, says the president of Malawi, quote, the decency of telling the truth. Madonna accused Banda of telling lies about her. The spokeswoman for Madonna suggests the criticism were linked to the removal of the president's sister as head of Madonna's humanitarian organization in Malawi. Whatever the cause, the War of Words is a disaster for Madonna's complicated relationship with the country. Madonna, as you know, adopted two Malawi children and was bitterly criticized after abandoning plans to build a $15 million elite academy for girls. Not so elite now. There's a musical version of all this, and engineers down the line, this time it's the clean version. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, CNN has announced they are bringing back Crossfire, where people on the left and people on the right yell at each other on television. I thought I'd do the same on radio.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is At Loggerheads. At Loggerheads, two opinions on an issue of current importance, neatly balanced on the head of a microphone. Today, gun control and immigration reform. On the left, John Rivers. On the right, Yakov Smirnov.
John, if anything's crazier than controlling guns but not immigrants, it's my career. It's one of the hallmarks of sovereignty to have domain over your own border. I know. I saw it in the Hallmarks Hall of Fame. In Russia, Hallmark sends you a card. What a country. Parts of America which have strictest gun laws have most crime. Parts of America which arm the border have least illegal immigration. What does that tell you? In Russia, they have simplest form of gun control. It's called Putin. What a country. Meantime, people who want to play by the rules, come here legally, work hard, maybe open their own theater in Branson, they're being discriminated against by the people who don't even have to cross an ocean to get here. People who multiply faster than geek in math bowl. People who think immigration laws are for Russians. In Russia, immigration laws are for Russians. What a country. If the last 10 years have taught us anything, John, besides have your own accountant do the accounts on your own theater, it's that the only cure for an illegal immigrant is a legal firearm. John?
Yakov, saying guns don't kill people, people do, is like saying poison doesn't poison people, people poison people. Unless it's that terrible perfume by Dior poison. It smelled like carnations on steroids, please. It was more offensive than early bird dinner at the bait shack. Let's not kid ourselves. The undocumented immigrants are the only people in this country who would come and take care of my house and wouldn't want a king's ransom for doing it. Meanwhile, if the gun nuts are so concerned about preventing tyranny, where are they when the cops tow your car? I'll tell you this, Yakov. If we ever follow Herman Cain's advice and electrify the border fence with Mexico, it's going to use up more energy every year than Beyonce's hot rollers. I'm sorry, please. It's easier to buy a gun that can mow down a nightclub's worth of people in 10 seconds than to get a decent parking spot at Nordstrom's. I'll tell you this, my friend. The way things are going, pretty soon the only show I'll be performing at is going to be a gun show. I'm Joan Rivers.
And I'm Yakov Smirnov. And we both agree,
there's no control when you're at loggerheads.
At Loggerheads is produced with the aid of a grant from the Evans Foundation. Evans, just because. Join us next time for another dichotomous look at a polarizing issue. At Loggerheads. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
New UCLA men's basketball coach Steve Alford has apologized for the way he handled a sexual assault charge involving a player on his team when he coached in Iowa in 2002. He faced media questioning about the incident since he was hired to coach the Bruins a couple weeks ago. He addressed the matter in a statement. I want to believe this is a player that played for him in Iowa, Pierre Pierce. I wanted to believe he was innocent. In response to a media question, I publicly proclaimed his innocence before the legal system had run its course, he said. This was inappropriate, insensitive, and hurtful, especially to the young female victim involved, and I apologize for that. Go Bruins. The head of Royal Bank of Canada apologized to employees affected by the bank's decision to outsource their jobs and promised the workers they'd be offered comparable positions within the Royal Bank of Canada. The public apology of Gord Nixon, CEO of RBC, appeared on the company's website days after Canada's largest bank was mired in controversy for hiring an outsourcing company to replace its IT workers. A Taiwanese news station has apologized for airing footage of Queen Elizabeth II while reporting the death of Maggie Thatcher. All white women look alike, I guess. A subgroup of the National Rifle Association apologized this week for issuing a report citing a school shooting that did not actually occur. The National School Shield, a task force created by the NRA in the wake of the Newtown school shooting, fleshed out its recommendation to put armed guards in schools. But the New York Times and Mother Jones caught the group incorrectly citing a school shooting in Minnesota to validate the need for its proposals, and has now apologized. The incident the NRA task force was referring to happened 5 years earlier at a different school in the same state. Dateline Anchorage, animal activists have welcomed reforms made by the Iditarod sled dog race in the aftermath of a dropped dog death, and have issued an apology to the musher it accused of having left the dropped dog unattended. Dropped, not meaning from a height, ladies and gentlemen, just taken off the race track course. Dateline Helsinki, Finland apologized to President Putin, there's that man again, after its police allegedly put him on a blacklist of people with connections to criminal activity. What, you mean he, his, what? Seeking to avoid a diplomatic spat with its historically dominant neighbor, Finland quickly removed Putin's name from the list, which is not public, but whose inclusion of Putin was revealed by a Finnish broadcaster earlier in the week. I wish to extend Russia's president's sincere apologies for the incorrect registry entry, said the interior minister in a statement. In Salina County, Kansas, County Commissioner Jim Gile has apologized for using the term N-rigging instead of what he says he meant to say, which was jury-rigged. He says, I'm not a prejudiced person. I have built habitat homes for colored people. Here's Rick Ross again a day after Reebok ended its relationship with him. The rapper acknowledged that his lyrics in a song, U-O-E-N-O, were offensive. In a statement, Ross said, being a musician is a great responsibility. Yeah, but you're a rapper. And that his choice of words in the song does not reflect my true heart. He raps in the song about giving a woman the drug MDMA, known as Molly, and having his way with her. In his official apology, Ross says men who listen to his music should know that using a substance to rob a woman of her right to make a choice is not only a crime, it's wrong. His second apology in a week, ladies and gentlemen. He's getting good at it. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, if you wonder just how cushy the banks have it, there was a hearing this week on the Independent Foreclosure Review, and you will hear much more reporting about the Independent Foreclosure Review. If you don't know anything about it, please give. You'll hear more reporting about it in a week or two here on this broadcast. But it was a review ordered by the federal government, ordered by the Office of the Controller of the Currency, the main banking regulator, to see how many homeowners were affected by bank or mortgage servicer errors and deliberate malfeasances in the foreclosure on their homes. The review, in case you didn't follow, was closed prematurely before it had really reached any firm conclusions. And the regulators, the Federal Reserve and the OCC, announced a program of compensating homeowners. I think the total was $9 billion, although they don't. Well, a lot of homeowners wrote in requesting relief from what they regarded as unfair treatment in foreclosure. I think that total was about $4 million. So there's a hearing this week in the Senate, and representatives of the Federal Reserve and the Office of Controller of the Currency are being questioned by new Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren in this excerpt.
Let me just make sure I understand this completely. I want to know on a bank-by-bank basis the number of families that were illegally foreclosed on. Will you give me that information?
Eventually, we were going to issue a statement to the public where we provide additional information, but if we go through the processes that I described previously, we can share it to Congress in its oversight capacity.
So you're saying you will make that information publicly available?
I did not say that. I said that we're planning on issuing a public statement that wraps up the IFR and
that's
provides
not
additional
what I'm
information.
Asking for. What I'm asking for is a bank-by-bank analysis of how many families they illegally foreclosed on. Will you give us that information?
We can provide that to Congress in its oversight capacity if we go through the process, the normal processes that we're prepared to follow.
And why are you not making that public? I just want to make sure I understand.
I don't know that there's been a decision not to. I think that we're still evaluating what
claiming,
we're going to release publicly.
Are you claiming that the information about illegal activity is privileged and confidential?
It's all part of it is all confidential supervisory information, but that does not mean that we won't at some point release some of that information. That decision just hasn't been made at this point.
So you're saying when you find evidence of illegal activities
yes.
by the banks, when
yes.
they have illegally foreclosed
yes.
against homeowners, that information is privileged and you will not release it without a letter from Congress?
If it is derived from the bank examination process, yes, it is.
How else would you get it?
Well, sometimes you get information through third parties, through outside sources, but in this case, that's not
the case.
So
unless someone throws a rock through the window with this information tied to it, you will not release it? Is that what you're saying?
To the extent that the information is confidential supervisory information derived from the exam process, it is subject to privilege. We don't ordinarily make that public. However, in this case, we do plan on making public issuances describing further findings and further analysis of the process.
On a bank-by-bank basis of illegal activity?
I don't know if that's been determined yet.
All right, so let me ask it from the other point of view. You now have evidence in your files of illegal activity, I take it, for some of these banks. I get that from the evidence you've released about the charts, who's going to get paid what. So if someone believes that they have been illegally foreclosed against, will they still have a right under this settlement to bring a lawsuit against the bank?
Yes.
All right. Now, if a family wants to bring the lawsuit, you're both lawyers, would it be helpful, if you're going against one of these big banks, would it be helpful for these families to have the information about their case that's in your files? Mr.
Yes.
Ashton?
It would be helpful, obviously, to have information related to the injury. Yes, it would.
Okay. So do you plan to give the families this information? That is, those families that have been victims of illegal foreclosures, will you be giving them the information that's in your possession about how the banks illegally foreclosed against them? Mr. Ashton?
I think that's a decision that we're still considering. We haven't made a final decision yet.
So you have made a decision to protect the banks, but not a decision to tell the families who were illegally foreclosed against?
We haven't made a decision about what information we would provide to individuals. That's true, yes.
Mr. Stepana?
We're in the same position.
Wow, it's like the banks are priests or something. Ladies and gentlemen, you may have seen President Obama released his proposed budget this week, which included something called chained CPI, a change in the way the cost of living index is calculated for Social Security recipients. Basically, the statistical magic of chained CPI, as I understand it, and you know who am I, is that it assumes, you know, normal CPI follows purchases of a basket of goods. Chained CPI assumes that if the price of a certain good goes up, certain consumers will substitute for that particular commodity a cheaper, lower grade commodity, and it therefore takes that into account. So the cost of living doesn't go up as much in this particular statistic. It goes up as much in real life. That's why the consumer had to switch, you see, but it results in a lower level of increase of the Social Security payment because it's tied to a lower calculation of the cost of living. In other words,
you're sitting in your house, getting ready to watch some hoops, when all of a sudden your wife appears in the kitchen door, holding the family checkbook, and you know, it's budget time again, and it seems like there's no way out. Again. Hi, I'm B-Rock, and here at B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn, it's budget time all the time, and there's always a way out, thanks to our high-volume way of doing business. That's right, we talk louder, and you pay the difference. This week, our budget beater special will have you moving your mom or dad to the shadier side of the assisted living home. And you won't believe how little it saves you. From the geniuses at OMB Research comes CCPI, a brand new way to cut the cost of living by buying cheaper stuff instead of waiting for sales that never seem to come. CCPI helps older folks cut back on everything they buy every day, from food to medical care. And unlike fad diets, which never seem to work, CCPI guarantees fewer high-quality calories in every meal, every day. Sounds too good to be true, and it's anything but. Because at B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn, we only negotiate with ourselves. We've already saved you the money. Then we pass the savings on to ourselves. That's why it's called CCPI. You'll think you're seeing double when you try to find the bargain. But don't take my word for it. Ask the folks who work here at Grand Bargain Barn and see for yourself how much they want to keep working at Grand Bargain Barn. Now, normally, this special offer on CCPI wouldn't last forever. But when B-Rock decides to make a deal, the deal-making never ends. That's why now's the time to get to your nearest Grand Bargain Barn, and there's always one near you, to find out how CCPI can make your Social Security dollars go farther, simply by making sure they never come home. It sounds impossible, but at B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn, the only thing that's impossible are the savings. We'd make the offer even better, but like my wife says,
the Republicans won't let us. They're crazy.
CCPI. Just one more reason we say nothing grows at B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn. Come on down this weekend, or we'll come to you.
Grand Bargain Barn. Grand Bargain Barn.
Arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, and terbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. Not interesting? I knew you would. I hope you're all taking notes because there's going to be a short quiz next period. There's holmium and helium and hafnium and erbium and phosphorus and francium and fluorine and terbium and manganese and mercury, molybdenum and magnesium, dysprosium and scandium and cerium and cesium and lead, praseodymium and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, metallium, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, krypton, neon, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
Happy 85th birthday, Tom Lehrer. And now, speaking of certain elements, news of our friend the atom. And he's not here today. He's having his protons buffed. Financial problems face EDF, the French giant energy firm. Financial problems may force them to pull out of a $21.5 billion project to build the first of a new generation of nuclear power plants in Britain, according to a French expert, Maïssy Schneider, a former energy advisor to the French government, questioning whether EDF could finance the investment. Quote, EDF is in big trouble. The whole of the nuclear power industry in France is in big trouble, he told the BBC. France, of course, relies on nuclear for a lot of its energy. Interesting choice. A decades-long debate about whether Germany's nuclear waste should be stored somewhere has reached a milestone. A cross-party deal, that's bipartisanship in our country, between the federal and state governments paves the way for a fresh start for the search. The agreement effectively hits the reset button. There's that reset button on an issue that has been the subject of debate for years. A committee will start preparing potential sites that could be used to store nuclear waste to come up with a short list by 2015. The site must be selected by 2021 and built by 2040. So pull up a couch. Against the backdrop of the arrest of Sergei Shutov, a director of a subsidiary of the Russian Atomic Energy Company, on charges of corruption, fraud, and supplying cheap Ukrainian steel blanks and steam generators and nuclear reactors, The former head of the Atomic Energy Regulatory Board in India has demanded an immediate investigation into the safety of one of their nuclear plants, as it was that company that had supplied components for the reactor. He demanded constitution of an independent body of nuclear engineering specialists to ascertain the safety of the plant. This is the first time in the history of the Indian nuclear establishment that a former regulator has questioned the claims of the government that the plant is foolproof and, quote, greener than even green. And German journalists have discovered barrels of radioactive waste on the floor of the English Channel, just a handful of the thousands dumped there decades ago. It was previously thought that the material had dissipated. Now politicians are calling for the removal of the potentially harmful container. Some 28,000 containers of radioactive waste were dropped into the English Channel between 1950 and 1963, apparently deliberately. Experts have assumed the containers had long since rusted open, spreading the radioactivity through the ocean and thus rendering it innocuous. That's a lovely assumption. Thank you for that one. But a new investigative report has concluded the waste is still intact at the bottom of the sea, just waiting to be innocuous whenever the containers rust. Rust apparently did sleep. Who knew? News, clean, cheap, safe, to think, bing. It is our friend, the atom. And that is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America, by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want, at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast at KCRW.com, iTunes, and Sideshow Network. And it'd be just like practicing so you can play like this if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. A show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast, a playlist of this music, and a swell store at harryshearer.com. And I'll see you on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.